HealthIQ.com/TRN.
Scott? Is it forward slash? It we is. Never want to go backwards.
You
want
to lean forward when you run.
HealthIQ is a company that has reinvented the way life insurance companies connect with healthy people, which are the lower risk, lowest risk.
They believe the best way to improve health around the world is to recognize people that are making the right choices.
So if you're in the market for life insurance, or you have life insurance and you just want to compare, go to healthiq.com/TRN and find out if you qualify for lower rates.
People are saving money and staying healthy. A Lakey Pole, they're all over the place, Scott. They're on the mountain, and they're helping runners get up the hill.
How many miles do you have with your Lakey Poles right now?
Well, over into the thousands, and they look just like I pulled them out of the box. Razor sharp point at the end.
Those things can be used as weapons.
It's still sharp. But we have Travis Macy with us here today.
Coach Travis Macy, are you used to using trekking poles in your running?
Yeah, guys, you know, I've actually been huge into trekking poles for years now, you know, starting with my adventure racing in the early 2000s. And then, you know, prior to that, my dad was doing the eco challenges and adventure races. And he was actually sponsored by Lakey Poles back in the day. So, you know, I was growing up using them. And I know for a lot of ultra runners, it's like, man, you know, what is this? Is this a Euro thing? Does it work or not? But I mean, I've been using them literally as long as I've been doing ultra runs, and I'm a huge fan. Uphills, downhills, I really like them, and I constantly recommend them to my athletes.
So you have a pair of their new, really ultralight trail trekking poles. What is your favorite feature of these Lakey trekking poles?
Yeah, you know, and I've been around the block with poles. What sets these apart is the grip system. It's got a removable grip system, so you can actually detach the grip from the pole itself. And I put a bunch of miles on these things this summer, running, hiking, trekking around. They're holding up great, and I love them.
So go to our partners page and click on the Lakey link, because that'll put you inside their store and give you 20% off any purchase
between now and the end of the year.
Absolutely.
So you gotta act quick.
You gotta get to the top of the hill before the bell goes.
And Travis Macy, we'd like to thank you. You can find out more about Travis at travismacy.com, M-A-C-Y. You can find out more about his coaching services that he offers.
And his Ultra Mindset.
Yeah, it's a book that he wrote, and he has a course on the Ultra Mindset. We know that that's important in trail running. Tailwind Nutrition. It is all you need all day, period.
All the time. I mean, if it's hot, if it's cold, you always have to think hydration. And that's why we have Travis Macy ask the coach for this segment. Hey, coach, I've got a question for you. When it's hot, I realize I need to drink. But when it's cold, do I need to worry about hydration just the same?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is, yes, you do need to worry about hydration. You know, your needs may be different depending on conditions. And, you know, there can be a variety of factors that change things in the winter. I think one thing to think about is what are you wearing? Because many people, I think, overdress in the winter because they want to start out comfortable, but then they get going and then they warm up. And then pretty soon they're heated up because they have too much clothes on. And the next thing that happens is they're sweating like crazy. And if you've put yourself in a situation like that, you're actually going to need possibly even more fluid and electrolytes and calories than you might need in the summer. However, if you're layered correctly and, you know, probably in the winter, that means starting off a little bit cool. If you're layered correctly, then you might need a little bit less hydration and electrolytes than you need in the summer. So, again, it's dynamic. You'll need to try out different things, but the answer is yes.
You got to keep drinking, even in the winter. Don't forget those electrolytes. The best place to get them in a savory package is at tailwindnutrition.com. I also want to mention at Travis's website. He does coaching. He does seminars. You can learn more about him. You can join his mailing list where you can find out more about the Ultra Mindset courses that are coming up, and you can make the most about your with your business, sport, and family life.
Coach Macy, thank you so much for bringing the message that you need to drink. If it's hot, if it's cold, it doesn't matter. Get to the nutrition you need in, and Tailwind Nutrition's the way to go. Ultra Running Magazine, the original podcast. Why do I say that, Scott?
Because it was a non-audio podcast in a book form.
Ah.
Back before there were podcasts. And it still is the authority in ultra running. You can get race reports. You can get, they have some of the best authors there that you can just continually learn. It is like a course, a higher level master's degree course that you can learn from Ultra Running Magazine.
Like continuing education.
It is.
If you have a degree, you are tasked with keeping your continuing education up.
You can get CEU credits by subscribing to Ultra Running Magazine. And they give Trail Runner Nation members a discount. If you go to our partners page, click on the Ultra Running Magazine link, you can get 25% off current subscription prices. 1 year for a mere $29.95.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right, we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
Yeah, thank you, Don. You know, I mean, I didn't know what it was going to be like. You know, you sound like a nice guy on this podcast, but...
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards, and
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will, the Group of the Nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. All right. Are we ready?
Probably thought he needed to finish under 80 hours for 200 miles. He didn't realize that Moab 200 was 240 miles.
I think he realized that as soon as he pulled out of the 202 aid station. Hey, welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War.
And today we have Cameron Haynes, who just finished Moab 240 and the champion of Moab 240.
The outright champion.
And we have Courtney Duwalter with us, and welcome to you both. Let's get a recap and kind of hash out what happened in this crazy desert we were in last week. You know, welcome, Courtney. Not too many people at the onset would think that the winner would be 10 hours in front of second place.
10 hours. That's like a long, slow 50K.
Let me tell you what.
That's like a marathon for me.
For many of us, she was traveling twice our speed. So if you were going down the road at 60 miles an hour, think of Courtney running by you at 120.
We got to slow this example down.
No, hey, you know what? I was at work today, and this guy goes, hey, good job in that Moab race. I'm like, oh, thanks. Yeah, it was awesome. And he goes, but what about that woman who won? I said, yeah, she's a beast. And he's like, he goes, she was running like 6 minute miles. I mean, pretty close. So,
hey, so Courtney,
but it's just funny.
So Courtney, this was your first attempt at anything over 100 miles. Is that correct?
Let me step in front of Courtney for one second and shout a couple things for her and say in 2016 and 17 she won Run Rabbit Run, 100 mile run. She is a female 24-hour American record holder, which included 155 miles of running. So she's been over 100 before, and she just completed Moab in 57 hours, 52 minutes. Cameron Haynes, congratulations to you at 79 hours. And I came in the rear, and somebody's got to sweep the course, doggone it, 101 hours. That's like almost twice what Courtney did. So now, Courtney, off to you. Go ahead and answer Scott's question, which was?
My question was obviously incorrect, that you'd run 150 some odd miles in 24 hours, but is this the longest distance that you've run to this point?
Yeah, absolutely was the longest distance. I think before this, I had done the 155 miles in 24 hours on a track, so just the flat, easy surface for your feet. And I think the longest time I had been out ever was 29 hours. Otherwise, I'd never gone past that in time or distance.
So with that background, what was your plan going into this crazy 240 mile race that you're going to be out there for a couple days anyway?
Sleep plan?
Sleep.
Great question.
Evidently your plan for speed was faster than what everybody else's plan was. But what were your expectations?
It was kind of a no plan. I had really high expectations of myself, but I didn't know how my body was going to hold up to the miles and to the multiple days and multiple nights. The plan was to go out and hold a pace that felt really good, and then to just, like, as things happened, figure out the plan for getting past those hurdles. So I wasn't sure, like, if I was going to get really sleepy the first night, or if I would be, like, whimpering in the fetal position on the side of the trail at 100 miles. I didn't know. So just being ready to be really flexible was what I was trying to keep in mind the whole time.
Hey, Courtney, I want to hear how much you slept, but in just a second. But we're going to come back to Cameron and ask him. I'm interested in his sleep plan or how it transpired for him. Courtney, how much did you sleep out there?
I slept for 21 minutes.
Oh my god!
It took me that long to change my socks.
Was that 21 minutes at one set, or was that broken up into like five?
No. It was 20 minutes was one go at it, and that was really poor sleep. I didn't actually fall into the deep sleep I had hoped for. And then 1 minute, which was the game changer a little bit later, just in the middle of the trail.
All right, so
1 minute of sleep. Was it worth the 1 minute?
That gosh. Best 1 minute of sleep I've ever gotten.
Just so you know, you had 10 hours to squander if you wanted. Hey, Cameron, what did you do with your sleep?
I was trying to, I don't want to sleep. So because I always think that sleep is, you're not moving forward, of course. So I tried to just go as long as I could. And that was into the second day. And then I slept a couple times, like 12 minutes, and then I had a one sort of like almost exactly like Courtney, where I thought I was asleep for 8 hours, and I popped up. Like, I go, how long have I been asleep, to my brother Taylor, who was running also, and I was like in a panic. I'm like, how long was I asleep? And he goes, 1 minute. So that was the exact same thing, and it's just crazy how much it feels like in a time machine, and so much time had passed, but it was 1 minute. But I was trying to get by on the bare minimum, and maybe it would have worked if I would have been faster like Courtney. But I ended up having to get, I think on the last night or something like that, like an hour and 15 minutes. So I ended up getting about 2 hours. And then after that hour and 15 was that long downhill coming from somewhere, but it was like a 10 mile downhill stretch. And I was able to run really hard after that. In that really cold aid station down in the bottom, you did the 2 mile climb and then 10 mile downhill.
Yeah,
and that was
that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So that the hour 15 minutes sleep, I think really paid off, because I felt like I felt as fresh as, if I took off here after a week of doing nothing. So, yeah, that was my plan. I didn't want to sleep, but I ended up having to sleep. I was just going so slow at that time, and then it really paid off.
Remind me, Cameron, you ran Tahoe last year. Did you sleep more at Moab or less?
I ran Bigfoot last year, and I slept
Bigfoot.
I slept 3 hours at Bigfoot. And that was, I didn't really know what to expect at all. You know, it seems like you can power through a couple nights. It's that, you know, it's that third day that it gets pretty tough, but I slept 3 hours. So I slept less than this time and finished in about the same time. And going into it, nobody really knew what to expect. And I heard these really good runners, better than me. I'm just kind of like a bow hunting runner, but I heard these really good runners talking about that they wanted to break 70. And me and Taylor were thinking, man, breaking 70 seems crazy. You know, I mean, we knew I had won Bighorn before, and then this was 33 extra miles. And so, but we had in our mind that 70 hours would be a good run in the 70s for sure. And so that was kind of the goal.
Hey, Cameron, was Taylor, your brother, was he a pacer or an entrant?
No, he paced me at Bigfoot last year, and he's a really good runner. He's 10 years younger than me and a better runner than me. And so this year he's like, he wanted to run because he ran like over 100 miles last year at Bigfoot. So he ran this year, but he said his goal was to help me not go too fast. But normally I go out, you know, whatever it is, a 10K or a 200, and I go out and I'm just like wheels blazing, and I end up just trying to hang on at the end. And just, so his goal in this race was to have me go out conservative and then get me to 200. And so he did that. He did an awesome job, and I felt really good. And that last day, I was running probably as strong as I had the whole race. And I guess looking back now, maybe I went out too conservative, but you know, that's all part of this deal. You just try to learn.
Hey, Courtney, can you go out too conservative in a race? Have you ever done that and regretted it looking back going, man, I've got too much left in the tank?
Going out too conservative is not usually the side of the problem I fall on. Usually I'll do more like I go out a little bit too fast for what I can do and try and hang on.
How long does it take you to realize that, and can you pull it back in? Can you make that adjustment on the fly, or once you've gone over the edge, you go, yeah, I blew this one. Can you recover?
I think it depends on the race. Like if I go out too hard in a 50-mile race, there isn't quite the time buffer to recover from that. You just then have to like gut it out and death march your way to the finish line. Versus I think in something as long as 238 miles, if you go out too fast that first day, for example, you've got plenty of buffer time to recover and like really replenish your nutrition and give yourself some time to reset. I think, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a couple questions about feet, about shoe change, sock, and if you guys had any demons down below your ankles. I would like to know that. But first, I'm going to share with you my 101 hours came somewhere. My moving time probably wasn't that bad, but I did a lot of sleeping. Have you ever had one of those days on a training run where you say, I'm just glad it's not race day? Well, I had that on race day. And at 35 miles, guys, I was already pulling for trailside sleep in the afternoon. Dang. On the first afternoon. Not good. I slept the first night for 6 hours. That's a lot of hours. If you do the math, you might find that I would have beaten Courtney if I was not sleeping. I had a lot of sleep.
Hey, I want to ask one little small question before we get back to our guests here, to Don.
Yeah.
I think this is the first 200 that you have run that you actually pulled out the bivy and slept on the trail, right?
Oh, I know. I did that at Bigfoot, too.
Yep. So you did?
Yep.
I don't remember.
I did.
I was there. I must have been asleep.
You weren't pacing.
tell me, did you get good sleep in a bivy on the side of the trail?
You know, guys, so I figured this sleep stuff out. And I know this is Cameron and Courtney's time to shine, but I'm going to say that I've learned that there are cold spots and warm spots as you go down the trail. You know what I'm talking about, guys, when all of a sudden some cold air comes by or some warm air comes by? And you catch that warm air, and that's the sleep spot. I mean, that's where you got to go. And then you start looking for a little bit of shelter and that warm gush. Those are two pieces down. Now, if you can find a soft piece of dirt and some coverage and that warm
piece of dirt,
you have struck gold, and there's a good chance there's already somebody laying there. Okay, so that's the sleep thing I learned.
Do you spoon them? That's my question. If you find somebody there, do you spoon them?
If they're sleeping and they're sound asleep, I will take advantage of their body warmth. Hey, feet. Did feet surprise you, Courtney? We'll lead with Courtney first and then go to Cameron. Did your feet hold up the whole way? What shoes did you wear? Did you change any?
Yeah, my feet held up the whole way. I mean, they got a little tender, or like once I'd stop, they'd need a few minutes jogging again to feel good. But I did not change my socks or my shoes at all the whole race.
Did you take them off?
Yeah. Did you have gaiters on to keep the sand out? Because I was a sand collector.
Yeah, I did have some gaiters on, and those were super helpful. So without those, I probably would have needed to change quite a bit more. But I just didn't want to mess with a good thing. You know, it was like at moments bearable, and at other moments it was awesome. Like my feet felt great. And so I didn't want to risk taking off my socks and having my feet like balloon out and swell and then feel really bad in my shoe. So I just stuck with it, stayed the course.
Which shoe did you run in? Is it Hoka? You're a Hoka athlete, I believe.
Solomon. It was a Solomon shoe. It's called the Sense Ride.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that shoe. So, well, sorry. Maybe I am the editor and I'll fix that up. Cameron, what about you? Tell us about your shoe. You're an Under Armour guy, right? Cameron, did I get that one right?
I want to know about Cameron. Did your feet perform like they did at Bigfoot? Did you have any issues? Did you have any lookouts going into Moab?
Yeah. No, you know, I mean, it's... feet are always such a big deal. My feet did pretty good. I mean, I ran today, so I mean, obviously it can't be too bad. I had some blisters, and I had some of that tape they use is like so good, and they held my feet together, but once you start to take the tape off, it's so adhesive it rips the blisters off. Oh. And so that's my blisters are kind of healing from that because the skin came off. But all in all, I mean, I was able to run the whole way through. Of course, there's pain. There's always pain. The biggest pain was one time I was running and I felt a sharp, I don't know, sensation of pain in my left foot. And that was a blister actually popping as I ran. And so that's, I don't know if you've had that happen, but there's a big difference between an unpopped blister and a pop blister. And so, but as Courtney said, I think kind of like what she said was after the aid station, and it took a little while to get warmed up. Well, it's almost that getting warmed up is getting used to the pain and kind of, you know, just adjusting to it and blocking it out, I think, for the most part. And so once you get in a groove, I mean, it's just the way it goes. I mean, nobody's ever going to quit from a blister. So you just kind of, you know, deal with it. But I had some blisters, but all in all, my feet did okay.
Hey, Courtney, I have a question. You know, finishing a 240-mile race in 57 hours and some change, I want to know, did everything just go perfect? Was this the race of a lifetime where your nutrition was on, your hydration was on, your feet were good, no cramps, good attitude mentally, you were there the entire time, or were there distractions and...
some dark times.
Yeah.
It was a normal roller coaster. I feel really lucky because it wasn't like too severe of a roller coaster, but there were like I got nauseous probably around mile 90, so I was having trouble with calories for a while. And gosh, going into Uwa Lake, which is like mile 188, I think. That stretch of trail leading into that aid station was just taking forever. And I was kicking every rock on the trail, I'm certain. And I had a pacer with me and I was just kind of like whimpering along, sometimes like punching the air 'cause I was so frustrated. So there were some low moments for sure. He would probably describe them even more colorfully than I am. But but otherwise, it stayed all pretty even keel. Like, my head stayed in a fairly good spot except for those points. And I was nauseous for a while, but never actually, like, losing the food that I had put in. So that was a positive for sure.
I'm always curious how. Oh, go ahead, Cameron.
Okay, I was just going to say one thing that I heard, but I never asked Courtney about at the race was, your husband. Well, I can't remember his name. Super nice guy. Is it Justin or what's his name?
Kevin.
Kevin. Yeah. Okay. Kevin. So I heard that he had, like, you know, your food. You had a pretty good plan for food and clothes at each aid station. Was that? I mean, is that true or did somebody make that up?
We had a pretty good plan. Mashed potatoes always go down really well for me. So he had a stash of mashed potatoes in the car. And then we just had, like, buckets of options in the car for clothing and switches like that. He actually was coming up to the aid station before UWA, so the one where you're in the LaSalle's and you're headed out into the second night. And coming up there, he got a flat tire. And then our crew member came to pick him up and got a flat tire. And so they were, like, miles away from the aid station with all my cold weather gear for the nighttime.
It was
going to hit 9 degrees that night out there. So we had to kind of scramble. He ran my clothes up the road for me as I hunkered into the aid station.
When I heard that, I was like thinking, man, that's one area I could do a lot better in. Because I'd go to the aid station and have no plan on anything, no plan on clothes, no plan on food. And I mean, it's not like that's going to make up 22 hours, but I'm just thinking for increasing my performance, I think that's an important part. I mean, could learn a lot from your approach there and other people's approach that really think that out. But just curious.
Yeah, there's always something to learn from a race, and you come away with something. Like, it drags you into, I want to do that again so I can do that better and see what happens. I know for me, you know, as a drop bag only guy without the, you know, crew, at Bigfoot, I had Scott follow me along, and he had a truck full of everything. But when you're packing drop bags, you don't know what kind of day, what day three and a half is going to look like. And you're just kind of throwing stuff in the bag going, yeah, here's an Ensure and maybe a warm shirt. And it's just a free for all. You have no idea.
Saltines.
So it almost becomes comical as you're loading these bags up. You don't know where you're going to be. It's good to have a good crew. That's for sure. It makes a big difference.
Hey Courtney, I'm always interested in, so you said that you had some low spots, that you were punching the air and having a struggle, an internal struggle. How do you pull yourself out of that and get to the good spot again?
I think it's just soldiering on, knowing that the good spot is coming if you just give it enough time. And for me, that low spot lasted until I finally made it to the aid station. And I had been thinking about climbing in the back of the car and doing this 20 minutes of sleep for, I mean, like, probably 7 miles out there, just thinking about how amazing that sounded. So finally getting there was the turning point, even though the sleep didn't end up being what I hoped and all of those pieces didn't quite fall in. But getting there, and then I was able to turn the corner once I left that aid station again.
Hey Cameron, did you have any low spots, or did you fall into the cave anywhere, and how did you get out?
Of course. I mean, I didn't start off good. The first day, I'm like, you know, again, I was trying to go out conservative, and you think that if you go out conservative, you're going to feel like a racehorse in a starting gate ready to go. And I went out conservative and my legs felt heavy. I'm like, okay, this is not a good sign. I wanted to feel like a deer being able to bound around. And And so even that first 15 miles, I was like, God, that was rough. And then all the way across the desert, all exposed all day, my mouth, I think my throat is still sore for some reason. So I'm looking at the water, the water holes out there.
Oh,
and wondering
no.
how sick I would get if I drank that water. I mean, that was a tough first day for me. And so, but yeah, I mean, as Courtney said, you know, these races are just about, you know, everybody's going to have ups and downs. And, you know, I knew at the start it was going to be one of the toughest 2 or 3 days of my life, and everybody there knew it. And that's just part of the deal. So, I mean, you just push through and know that you're going to come out of it, and you're just going to have a high point. You're going to be running probably stronger than, you know, you ever have at that point, just hours down the road. So, I mean, that's just the name of the game, I think.
Yeah, there's a great, great photo out there, and it has Luis Escobar, the great photographer, in it. So somebody took a picture of him, and he's in a dark spot in an aid station chair, and it has a caption. Maybe you guys have seen it. It said, "The only way out is through," and I just love that. Yeah. I just love that caption. The only way out is through. You just got to get through this bad spot, because there is a good spot, whether it's the sun coming up the next day or an aid station or just clicking off those miles. You're right. Soldiering through, Courtney, is how you get through that. I have a question. Scott,
I was just going to say, I mean, we talked about this a little bit on our last podcast about grit, that there's a hope. if you're new to this sport and you're going 50K or whether it's a half marathon, I don't care how far it is, you got to have that hope that as bad as it is, if you, to your point, Don, go through it, there is better at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good thing. Thank you very much for sharing that.
You brought up 9 degrees in the mountains, cold. Was it colder, Cameron, first, and then Courtney? Was it colder than you thought it was going to be in Moab, or did you come prepared mentally for what that mountain had to hand out? 9 degrees is cold, by the way, when you're tired.
Yeah.
9 degrees Fahrenheit.
It was definitely
yeah.
It was definitely colder than I thought it was going to be. I hit the 9 degree night. I was heading up to from the aid station from I don't know what it was, but to 166, and I wanted to be at 166 at 9 a.m. And so that night I was going. It's pretty good, little maybe 3,000-4,000 foot climb. You run along the road for about a mile, then you take a left in onto the and head up the mountain. But it was freezing, and I'm like running, and I had so many clothes on, and it was tough. But then that grade gets pretty steep pretty soon, and so you warm up a little bit, but still it's one of those where it takes a while before you're taking clothes off and you're pulling your hood off your head, you know, but that's all right, because I mean, I guess on the flip side, it keeps you moving, because you know, if you stop, it's going to be pretty cold.
You die, Cameron. Just say it. You die.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, you're pretty cold when you're dead. So yeah.
Yeah. They don't even put you in a box that cold.
No, they don't need to. Hey, I was going to ask you guys. I mean, I told you I started off like, you know, I was like not how I'd hoped to feel at all. You know, everybody's taking off and everybody's all excited. But how did you guys start off? I mean, how do you feel like, you know, heading up that first little pole and that first morning?
Don, you want to go for that?
Oh, sure, because
he has a story. I want to hear about this.
Yeah.
You know, I was laying in the back of a Jeep at 6 a.m. sleeping. And I thought, you know what? I'm at the campsite. I've got another 15 minutes and sleep is precious and I could really bank this sleep. Well, that 15 minutes was exactly how long I left after you guys left. 7:15, I rolled through that starting line only went downhill from there. Yeah, so I'm adding these things up. Courtney,
it sounds like the race kind of interrupted your sleeping.
It was a real inconvenience. It didn't happen at the right time. Yeah. I'm adding up my moving time, and I'm thinking that Go ahead, Cameron.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No. I think that probably, I mean, if I could have slept like right up to the starting gun, I mean, I think that probably paid off. I mean, 15 minutes early is no big deal. I'm sure you caught up to everybody pretty quickly, right?
I did catch up, but maybe that was part of my demise. But I'll tell you that that 15 minutes I thought was going to be a real asset. I don't think that that was the time to take it. So Courtney, how was your
wait? No, we need to ask one other part of this.
What could there
and
be?
And that was mile 33.
Yeah.
So you're in mile 33 and you're saying it's time for sleep.
Yeah, I need more sleep. I wasn't feeling that good the night before, but I don't want to make excuses. You know, I mean, it was tough for everybody.
But I think that's an interesting thing about this is you know, this is your fourth 200-mile race.
You'd think I'd learn something.
And you realized you listened to your body. At mile 33, any rational person would go, "No, I don't sleep at mile 33." But you were smart enough, I think, to say, it's mile 33, I know I shouldn't sleep, but my body's saying I need to sleep, and you answered to your body.
And that's why we're friends, Scott. Courtney, tell me about your first 50 miles.
I was just trying to put it in kind of cruise control, and I was running with some of the people up near the front, so getting to have conversations and share some stories with some of those guys. Just enjoying it. It was beautiful out there. That first section was, I mean, those canyon walls were blowing my mind. Every direction you look, it was like towering, huge walls. It was so cool.
How about Jackson's Ladder? I didn't know anything about that or know the name, but go ahead, Cameron. Tell us about that Jackson's Ladder.
Which part was that?
That
awful climb?
I thought you just said, "Oh yeah," like I have that picture on my wall right now. It's my screensaver. Then I ask you, and you go, "Which one?" It's that one that went straight down. You're up in this. You're up on a butte, and all of a sudden, it's just this super steep down. Courtney, maybe you remember that.
Oh, I do. I was running with a guy. We got to the top at the same time. And I was picking my way down it, thinking, like, you're doing this okay. And then I look down, and the guy is already on the dirt road at the bottom, like a half mile down. I'm like, you started this at the same time.
Did he fall?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
No, he was like I know what you're talking about. Yep.
Hey, one thing
that was steep. You had to watch your step.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, one thing I was wondering, Courtney, because when I'm running, like, especially those long races, and it takes me a year to recover from one, so I don't know how you did three, Don. But anyway, when I'm running these long races, I have to consciously hold myself back going downhill because I don't want to blow out my quads and the heart of my joints and my ankles. Of course, I'm way older than you, but do you go fast? I mean, do you open up going downhill and make up time, or do you take it easy?
I wouldn't say I like actively restrain, because sometimes that's hard on your body too, but just try and like cruise downhill with whatever feels good, but not be like pushing the pace down the hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was wondering if you're better. I mean, I wonder if that's like a strength of yours where you can go down, you know, there's obviously a lot of climbing, but there's also a lot of descending. And I don't know. I'm just fascinated with how fast you can get through those mountains, because having done it, I know exactly how difficult it is. And I'm just like blown away by how well you did. So I'm trying to in my head break down, you know, your approach, I guess. But anyway, that's a little difference, because I know I definitely hold back.
Okay.
This is the lull part of the podcast.
We were discussing cold earlier, and I thought Courtney was going to answer. We were discussing cold earlier, and did you guys notice that when the sun went down, I mean, at mark 7 o'clock, boom, it got cold. It wasn't like you get a little bit of time, a little bit of leeway. I mean, the sun's down and all of a sudden warm gear is on. There's no delay. I had two sets of arm sleeves on, two running t-shirts, why it took me so long is because I just had to put this stuff on. All of a sudden, I'm seeing why it took me 101 hours. I was dressing.
So sleeping and dressing.
An Under Armour, jacket, you know, the rain jacket, and then a puffy jacket on top of that, and then my pack. Mm. I had a buff on my head, one over my face. It was cold out there.
What was on the bottom?
Anyway, I just wanted to talk about. I you know what? I had shorts on, and I have these lame sleeves that pull up on your legs like extra long arm warmers that go all the way up, but they don't stay up. And I had to use duct tape, rock tape, Leuco tape. I used everything to hold them up. I can't run in tights.
How come we don't have pictures of that, Freeman?
Oh, I've got a picture of a blister if you want to see that. I'll drop my drawers right now. They're still there. It was cold, and I can't wear tights. They just don't agree with me. So I don't. They chafe me in ways and places I prefer not to discuss. And so I tried these things, but duct tape is not good. Duct tape on your leg, not good. That was a bad idea. And Colin is across the table from us. He was the one that commandeered that tape. So I blame you for those that pain. Okay. Hey, plan A and plan B. We all go in with a plan A. Cameron, did you stay on plan A or did you migrate to a B or a C, or what happened with you?
Roughly I stayed with the plan to get, wanted to hit in the 70s. And so that's what I thought would be competitive. So that's kind of where I wanted to hit, and stayed with it. I mean, there's a few times during the course of it where I'm like, okay, screw plan A. I just want to finish. This is awful. I'm going to sleep for 8 hours and then get going again. But I was able to withstand and despite all the ups and downs, stayed pretty close and feel pretty good about where I ended up.
Good, good. Courtney, plan A, stayed A, went to a capital A to a little A. I mean, what happened?
Like I said, it was the no plan. So I expected a lot of myself, and my main goal was to be as efficient as possible through each section of the course, whatever that meant. So like if it was a steep uphill, to just like do some good hiking, and if it was flats or downhill that I could run, to try and like be efficient with that, and to spend time at aid stations and get in calories that I needed, but not to like dilly dally at them. And I tried really hard to stay the course with that no plan, and just like work through the low moments as they came, which were the only kind of like hiccups along the way, I guess.
Did you guys get a chance to eat at the Porcupine Rim? Those guys that were cooking the burgers with everything on them, and did you guys get a chance to eat that? There was a 3,000 calorie burger out there. Let me tell you about this burger. This wasn't my question, Scott. And you're giving me a look like you're wasting these guys' time.
But no, listen, I'm not. I'm hungry.
Listen to this burger and tell me if you could run after eating two and maybe even three of them, because the record was three. And I came in.
A runner ate three of these?
And then ran out. Okay, wow. So it had a hamburger. What's that?
I'm just excited to hear the toppings.
Okay, here we go. It had a hamburger. It had bacon. It had cheese. It had avocado spread. It had cream cheese. It had ham and pastrami and that were grilled and grilled onions. All on this burger, and it was dripping with grease, and you could order as many as you'd like.
How many did you eat, Don?
Two.
You ate two of those?
I was hungry. It was big.
Courtney, did you have one of those?
No,
or did
I
you
didn't.
Have mashed potatoes?
I had, oh, and I was demolishing the cheese quesadillas all over every aid station. They were making those up so delicious. So I was sticking with the cheese quesadillas. I think at Porcupine Rim it was morning, so I had some coffee and probably some mashed potatoes.
Cameron, what was your go-to aid station food?
My go-to was the egg, hash browns, avocado roll, like wrap. Yeah, wrap. So I would just, that was money for me. Egg, hash browns, avocado. That was it. And I do want to say one thing about the aid station people. They were so good about taking care of feet. I mean, it was amazing how nice they were and how good they did it at holding broke down feet together. So I know without that that type of support, I'm not saying I wouldn't have finished, but it would have been a lot worse.
Yeah, well, they were out there for what, 5 days. Some of them were out there cooking and fixing feet and telling jokes. They were so wonderful.
Hopefully not at the same time.
There is something to be said about Candace's volunteers and her aid stations, because I don't think I've had that good of food anywhere. At a restaurant, I mean, it is really, really good food. And the volunteers are some of the most kind, giving, patient people I've ever met. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, hands down.
No
agree.
Doubt. What did you?
Whole production's amazing.
Yeah, and I personally.
Hey, what did you learn from this? Go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say that personally, I think it all starts with the leader, with Candace and kind of her vision for this, and I think it starts with her and trickles down. And like I've told a lot of people, that the ultra running community is just the most genuine, supportive, best community there is. And I'm so happy with podcasts like this, the support from Trail Runner Mag. I know Courtney's going to be talking with Rogan here coming up. And I mean, it's this, what we do in that little slice of the world deserves a spotlight to be shown on it, because it's so positive and so refreshing and so empowering. I mean, when you finish a 200-mile race, I know, and for me anyway, I can go in regular life and feel like I can overcome any challenge on any regular day, any regular challenge. It seems debilitating to a lot of people here in the regular world, but when we've overcome something like that, it can change your life. And so it just means so much to me to be involved with people just like you guys, and then like the race, and then Candace and what she's cultivating with her little world there. It's I feel honored to be involved.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
And to both Cameron and to Courtney, you know, they came in respectively. We've talked about their times as they were much faster than I was. But when I came through, they were both there clapping for all the people coming through. You know, Courtney had been there a long, long time. I'm not going to do the math because I don't want to. But she was there encouraging people to come through. And Cameron was doing the same thing. This community, regardless of whether you come in first or second, it doesn't matter, or last. And Cameron, we were talking after that race about the arch and the lack of something. Do you remember what that was? I'm not quizzing you. I just want to take the punchline away. Do you remember? There isn't a something at her races.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's no clock there, and the time isn't necessarily the key point. It's just the completion, coming through that arch, coming through that destination trail arch, and just seeing an extended family there as happy for you as you are for completing. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Courtney's time is amazing, but on the other hand, it's the runner's time is irrelevant. It's you know, you ran Moab 240, and that's just what it is. I mean, and that's what's so special about it. And so, yeah, I mean, it was just amazing seeing the emotion, just the different emotions from people, because they'd been through so much during the course of those 3 days, just to see all that. Sometimes it pours out. Sometimes it's, you know, you've already, I don't know, it's ran its course, so you come in composed. But just seeing the difference and just the accomplishment is so amazing.
You know, there were 98 finishers at Moab. That's amazing. All 98 of them deserves quite a bit of respect.
And anybody that started it, didn't finish it, may have went through more than someone that did finish it. I mean, there are some people that were forced to drop just with the, you know, an aid station left. So there were some amazing stories out there. So, but as we're closing here, did you guys catch the Facebook post on the Moab site? It looked like that Candace is thinking about a 500. and she writes 500, and then she writes seriously. And there's like over 183 comments just instantly. Bang. So did you guys see that?
Yeah.
What do you think? Would you?
That's like.
Would you do it? Would you consider it?
Man, that she mentioned that earlier at the race, and then I didn't know if it was serious or not. So, but when I saw that post, I was telling my brother about it actually the night before. I'm like, hey, you know what Candace said, and I mean, you can't ask a group of people that will take on 240 whether they'll take on 500. I mean. Obviously, that's a yes. There's no, everybody's looking for their limit, right? So,
good. Well,
did she say where it was going to be? Volumes about like how, I mean, the work that Candace does and how well she does it. Like when she says, "What about 500?" Every single person in that Moab 240 group is like, absolutely yes. Like if you're a part of it, then I want to be a part of it as well. So I would definitely consider it and try and be a part of it if at all possible.
She probably has a full volunteer list already too for that race.
Well, I'm glad that Courtney's going to get to see what 101 hours feels like. We just have to do
maybe she will finish faster than a Don.
She might break 100, doggone it.
Oh, please.
Well, good. You know, I saw that 500 thing and I said, no way. But as I sit here and talk to you guys, I'm all in. I'm like, yes, if they're doing it, I'm doing it, doggone it. I love this community and this group and just how fearless it makes you to join arms with these guys, because if they're doing it, you can do it.
Yeah.
And I think the 200 is a new 100. I think we're going to see a lot of people taking this on over the next couple of years. Scott, you're due.
Okay, maybe.
Hey, any closing remarks? Oh, we got Colin here. He was a pacer and out there. Go ahead, Colin.
Hey, I actually have a question here for Courtney. And it has to do with advocacy. And the reason I ask is what you did was impressive, but it seems to me that we shouldn't be so blown away by the fact that a woman won the race. We should just say, wow, Courtney really did well. And I'm going to take a quick step back in time. A couple of weeks ago, I was hiking with some friends. We were coming down off the top of a 14er in Colorado, and one of the girls in the group made it a point to give a fist bump to every woman that was going up the hill. And she was fist bumping them, saying, girl power. And I thought that was awesome. But as a guy, I felt that it would have been a little bit strange for me to also fist bump these women going up, saying, hey, girl power. My question to you is, as we move forward, how could a guy like me or a guy like Scott and Don sitting here, what can we do to advocate for women in sport in a way that doesn't feel, say, like fake or contrived? You know, like it's...
Or patronizing, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Can I take a stab at that before Courtney does?
Sure.
I think she's done it. I think she's made the statement. She went out there, laid it down on the trail, beat everybody by 10 hours. I think she did the very best thing you could do for girl power. And I never saw Courtney as a girl. I saw her as a strong athlete that just kicked everybody's butt. And congratulations. I didn't see any gender. I just saw athlete. So that's my comment to you, Courtney.
Is that because I wear the men's clothing line?
No, it's just because you're so darn strong.
You can wear whatever you want, Courtney.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, when I'm out there, everyone is just a human like I am. And so if they're in front of me, I try and remember that they are a human and that I am also a human. And so I can therefore be competing against them. So I don't care if they're male or female. I'm going to try and push my limits to be up there stride for stride with them, if at all possible.
Right on. Very possible, by 10 hours possible. Cameron, any comments from you as we close out?
My comment is just of respect for an awesome performance. You know, what I enjoy seeing is, I shared Courtney's picture on my page, and whether we want to talk about it or not, it is, for young girls, I think it is empowering. I mean, when we're racing, I see Courtney and I see Pam Reed and I see so many of these tough, hard, I mean, just talented women runners, and I'm just used to it and not surprised at all. But to young girls coming up, I saw a lot of dads commenting on my page when they saw how well Courtney did, and it can give a young girl, I think, confidence or belief in themselves, which at a certain age is very important to dream big. And I get both ends of it. I get celebrating Courtney's performance as just a runner, and then I also get celebrating her as a strong woman. I would never fist bump one sex over another or exclude one, like the guys on the trail that you came across. But I don't think there's anything wrong with acknowledging. I enjoyed Courtney's personality in the photos. I didn't see her finish, but I just saw that, you know, she owned the race. She celebrated. She had personality and a big, bright smile. And that's nothing but positive for what we're trying to do out here and for the next generation of runners coming up.
Thank you, Cam.
No problem. You did awesome.
Well stated. Well stated, you guys. Hey, thanks so much for joining us here on this podcast. Scott, you got something to say? I see you with your "I have something to say" face.
Well, you know, there's a story that you and I have talked about that we wanted to talk about on Moab 200, and you can cut this out. We can edit it out if it's inappropriate. It's not inappropriate, but if it doesn't mesh. Let's talk about the Japanese dude. Do you want to talk about him or no?
Yoshi, it's a guy who...
Did you meet him, Cam?
Yeah, I did. No, he is... He's like, that was a guy who didn't speak English, right? I mean, so you were trying to communicate with him the whole time during the race, right, Don?
Right, right. We spent a wonderful 18 miles, which takes about, a day and a half. And just to put it in reference there, Courtney. And he had zero English. And it was so fun. We became the best of friends through sign language and facial expressions. And he'd come up over a ridge and just go, But then, you know what? Yeah. He would every once in a while, as I was running with Sylvia Greer, we would talk and we'd tell a joke and he would laugh. And so I was thinking that maybe he knows a little English because he's laughing at the right time. And then he comes up over a ridge and he says, overhang. Now, overhang is a compound word that's very sophisticated. It is not for your beginning English speakers. So I'm pretty sure he knows some English, but he was a wonderful trail companion and one of the highlights of my race.
You said he always had a smile on his face?
Always a pose. And the story about him, as I let you guys go, because I know, heck, we're taking so much of your time, but his first 2014, I think, Tahoe, he was coming up on cutoff time on the clock at the finish arch that you're talking about. If there is a clock, it's on somebody's wrist. And he was up there in the middle of that first climb with his trekking poles like a sword, waving them and waving them. They had to send somebody up there to drag him back down to make it under the cutoff. He made it like by 6 seconds as he was up there doing that. So he's quite a large personality. He's from Japan. I believe he's an orthopedic surgeon or a car salesman. I haven't figured it out, but he is a highlight of the race.
The reason why I bring it up is I just love the fact that you spent so much time with him. There's a language barrier, but there's not a trail language barrier.
None. No, he's the best. Anybody that knows him loves him. And I, as I was introduced to him, I'm late to the party because everybody knows him and loves him. And I can be included now as well. So,
hey, congratulations to both of you for just a freaking amazing job. I am in awe of all three of you. I think you guys have grit beyond my comprehension. And I'm just... I enjoyed this podcast. I just loved it. Thank you for joining us.
So go out and run.
Mas.